This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to the fifth season finale of Commentary. Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And Max had to go down to engineering to try to fix the warp core. And
yeah, it's leaking again. It's such a drag.
I know.
Do we have a warranty on that thing?
I don't know. So we'll see how it goes. But he can't come out right now. Because if he opens up the door, then he'll flood the whole compartment. So whatever. What can you do?
These things
happen. Anyway, we're here to recap our series on Leonard Nimoy, where we're looking at all of his starring roles on television, both fiction and non-fiction. So let's just get this thing started. The very first starring role on television that he had was on Star Trek. 1966 to 69, he played Mr. Spock, and kind of the face of that show. So what do you think about his work on Star Trek, the original series?
You know, made it work, was the perfect foil for Shatner, and, you know, their natural chemistry, along with DeForest Kelly, I think carried everything through.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, I think we've pretty much said, well, we haven't said all there is to say about his performance because it's extremely complex and everything like that. But, you know, he made Spock what he was, and by extension, he made Star Trek what it was, what it is.
Yeah.
So without Nimoy, I mean, who knows what Star Trek would look like without Leonard Nimoy, you know?
I don't think it has the longevity that it does. You know, all due respect to Shatner and everybody else that was on the crew, but I really do think that Nimoy was the fuel that kept it moving.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's not to say that Star Trek would have the longevity that it does if there was Nimoy and no Shatner either, you know, but it was like the perfect combination of elements. And this is actually something that we talk about on this week's upcoming episode of Standard Orbit. We do a what if kind of thing. What if The Cage had been picked up by NBC?
Wow.
And that was what the original series was. And it would be different. There's a lot of lurking variables. Nimoy is there, but that Spock character is going to be completely different because, number one, is going to be the Spock character, and he's going to be the crazy alien, you know?
Oh, that's true.
Who's saying, the women! That would be his catchphrase, I'm assuming.
Now I want that as a sound drop.
But, so that was his first role. Obviously, it made him a star and everything like that, at least a television star. And when the show was canceled, he very quickly moved, I'm assuming, right across the lot, honestly, to the other hit Desilu show, Mission Impossible, where he played Paris for seasons 4 and 5 of Mission Impossible, and he was the master of disguise.
Indeed.
Now, so what did you think about his performance on that show?
It's a lot of fun, and you can tell that Nimoy has a lot of fun with it because it's so different from what he had been doing. It really is an opportunity for him to, you know, show that he can be somebody other than Spock. You know, he's sort of like got a hippie vibe in the show, or at least a semi-beatnik vibe. You know, very sort of smooth, he's mellow, he's, you know, I never really understood the Spock sex appeal thing until I think I saw his chemistry really come alive rewatching the Mission Impossible episodes, because he really does have that sort of natural charisma that just sort of oozes out. And I think that character gives him a real opportunity to, you know, whenever he interacts with Leslie Warren, later Leslie Ann Warren. There's an actual layer of, you know, dynamism between those two characters.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think that he's really good on the show. I think that it was a really smart career choice because of the very specific performance which he had to give as Spock. You know, it's very, very. I'm not going to say one note, but there's like almost like this sort of tunnel vision to the character, which he needs to keep up for the entire show. Whereas, you know, if you're playing someone with emotions and everything like that, there's a lot more range as far as, you know, like what the character is doing in a sense, you know, like internally speaking. You know, the whole thing about Vulcans is they're keeping all of that bottled up, you know, so it's sort of like he's like a master of subtlety when it comes to playing Spock. But here on Mission Impossible, especially the fact that he was able to play a wide range of characters, it sort of like allowed him to explore all of humanity in a sense, you know?
Sure.
And that was really sort of, I think, beneficial to him as a performer, because it was able to sort of showcase his talents beyond those of Spock, and helped to make sure that he would not be typecast in that role any more than is, you know, natural. And, you know, I mean, hey, he does a great job. You know, I mean, like we talked about, you know, when I was watching that first episode with him, I was like, wow, it's so weird to see him act like a human.
Yeah.
That's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I can kind of see what you're talking about with the sex appeal, although, you know, I mean, I don't know. The sex appeal of Spock, I can definitely see as well. You know, I mean, my wife is just obsessed with him. And did you ever hear that Mindy Kaling quote about Spock?
No, I did not.
She said, "Girls like Spock because Spock's like, logically, I should not feel love. And we're all like, oh, yes, you will, you little hot Vulcan bastard."
Well, there you go.
I can see that.
You know, I guess the, you know, the forbidden fruit sort of thing, I guess. You
yeah.
know? Like that he's smart, he's capable, but he's, you have to work to win his affections.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, the 70s were kind of a dark time to be a Star Trek actor in a lot of ways. You know, this was sort of the time when, you know, your prime time success was gone, and there were a couple years there before it had picked back up again, and you were shot into like superstardom, and you all became millionaires and all that stuff. And there was those couple years in between where there was just like slim pickings for Star Trek actors, you know?
They were lean years.
Yeah. and sort of an oasis in that storm, and kind of a sign of things to come, was the animated Star Trek series, which aired in the 70s. And this was where Leonard Nimoy became a regular star for a third time, returning to the role of Captain Spock. No, I'm sorry.
He was
Commander
not
Spock.
Captain by then. Yeah, that's
You're right.
Right.
Commander Spock. And he was still doing his thing. I mean, what do you think about him on that show, and more specifically his involvement on that show?
Well, I mean, you know, it's everybody knows the behind the scenes part where he fought for his co-stars to be paid equally and to include them, you know, as part of the effort. But the animated series is really interesting because his delivery, his vocal performance is every bit as serious. Like he didn't approach it just as a lark. You could tell that Leonard Nimoy, the professional actor, showed up on set, or rather to the recording booth, to deliver those lines. He was still playing a character. Whereas, because I think that in the 70s, animation is a different animal now than it was then. You know, like it wasn't regarded with the same sort of seriousness and respect for voice actors back then, by the general public at least, as it is now. But he still brought to that role that sort of sterling professionalism and performance that you would expect from any other on-screen performance from him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to kind of build on that, you know, to me, like, the fact that people like Leonard Nimoy were even willing to do this show sort of lends credibility to it. You know, I mean, most of the time you hear about animated versions of television shows or movies or whatever, and you're just like, oh, well, of course there's an animated Rambo show. I mean, that one's kind of weird, but there was an animated Rambo show, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you ever see, I don't know if they did tests. I know that they did like storyboards and stuff for the animated Alien show, which was going to be on Saturday mornings.
It all begins and ends with the Mr. T cartoon show from the 80s for me. So
fair enough. That guy's amazing. Yeah. Apparently Mr. T was shooting an episode of, Extreme Makeover Home Edition across the street from my parents' house.
What?
And no one bothered to tell me this?
That's wrong. That is absolutely wrong. Meeting Mr. T, like, that's, wow. That I would be so, I would hold a grudge for many, many years about that.
Yeah. Oh, well. But yeah, I mean, you don't take these things seriously, you know? You just don't. And you definitely don't expect them to get the original actors to come back and do the voices. I mean, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. And here they got basically everyone back, you know, and to do a show which it doesn't even seem suited to a Saturday morning cartoon, really, you know?
Well, yeah, it's very lean compared to the original show because they're only half hour episodes, but there are actual episodes of the animated series that I think they benefit from the streamlined approach to it. Because there are plenty of original series episodes where the B plot is kind of like, ugh, okay, guys, come on. Yeah. And so I think there are instances of the animated series sort of elevating itself by having just that straight shot, streamlined approach.
Yeah. That's definitely true. And I mean, I can't imagine half of these episodes being any longer than they already are because that would be intolerable. but no, I mean, like, just the fact that everyone from Gene Roddenberry and all of the writers and everyone just came back and they're like, we're doing this for real, guys. And, you know, I think that, I mean, people tend to dismiss it already, which is weird to me. They should dismiss it because it's bad, not because it's animated. But people would dismiss it even more if they didn't have Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner.
Oh, sure.
You know?
If they just got, like, you know, just regular voice actors in, you know.
Lorenzo Music.
Well, okay. If everybody sounded like Garfield, maybe the show actually is better. But that's your sort of exception that proves the rule right there.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, everyone knows that I hate that show with a passion, you know?
Shame on
you. I just do, except for Yesteryear, which I think is better than most episodes of the original series. But, you know, I love the fact that Nimoy is on it, and his performance really sort of does add to the legitimacy of it. And I will, to the day I die, defend the canonicity of that series.
Okay, so even though you dislike it, you insist that those plots apply. They are just as valid as the original series. So in a sense,
absolutely,
we got our 5 years.
I've said this on numerous occasions.
There you go.
Yes.
I endorse your opinion.
Thank you.
I'm in your camp, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. So after that ended, still a dark time for Star Trek. The movies hadn't picked up yet, and Leonard Nimoy, probably based on his association with Star Trek and the otherworldly, decided to take on the role as the host of In Search Of, a documentary show about
don't make the air quotes. Okay. That's dismissive, whatever. Man. They were talking about important things.
All right, all right. About the unknown, you know, the great mysteries of the world. What did you think about his involvement with that show?
Oh, there's a little nostalgic couch set up where little Energon sits there and watches those repeats in his brain every so often, learning about Bigfoot, learning about Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
I know I went on and on about that episode. Please, somebody, please, just go watch it. It's on YouTube. It's so wonderful.
I need to watch the Jack the Ripper episode.
It's just fantastic. I mean, it's everything that was, you know, everything about the 70s is just encapsulated in that show. Not just the, you know, the sort of sense of style, but just the sensibilities that there's this real, you know, in the late 70s, there was this real sense of wanting to go out and explore. I mean, from my point of view, I mean, I was a little kid, so maybe that's the synaptic correlation in my brain is it really, you know, magnified it. All of those sort of senses of we don't have all of the answers and, you know, we are still in search of everything. And I mean, you know, the Bigfoot craze was, you know, that was huge. And investigating these things, I mean, it's almost mind-blowing to me that now everybody just sort of doesn't care about Jack the Ripper. Everybody really cared about Jack the Ripper back then and trying to solve that mystery. And so, I don't know. I think sort of the nostalgic appeal of it is the fact that the whole premise of the show is to dismiss the idea that we can or have answered everything up to this point. And I think that really makes it fun.
Yeah, since it wasn't a part of my childhood, I don't have the nostalgic feel for it, but I can totally see how you do, you know. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate that. I certainly have that for other things which are similar to this. And I mean, rewatching it, it's like you know, it asks some questions. Some of them may not be the best questions to ask, but, you know, I give it props for asking those questions. It's goofy, but that's part of the charm,
yes.
You know. And perhaps some of the questions that it asks will, you know, cause people to investigate further and find some real answers instead of the ones that they give at times.
Well, and keep in mind that it did spur its own imitator show, Ripley's Believe It or Not, hosted by Jack Palance, or I can never pronounce his last name properly. But, you know, so that was, in a sense, its own sort of competition. It gave birth to another show.
Sure, yeah. And Nimoy's involvement in it is weird, but I think, like what Max was saying last week, you know, really is kind of true that, you know, when he says something, because it's Spock, like, you do tend to take that at face value. And whether you should or not. And, you know, that's interesting. It's even if it may not be the best thing in the world, it's like interesting on sort of a social, philosophical level, you know. But it's curious. It's curious. And, you know, an interesting experiment.
Yeah.
Now the question is, does it hold up if you were to return to that premise 20 years later and do another show called Ancient Mysteries, which was also hosted by Leonard Nimoy? how would that work out?
In Search of the Next Generation.
Yes.
Although, actually, it's more of a Galactica 1980 sort of thing, because it's the same basic plot, only Lorne Greene is still there, but slightly different. So, sort of like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of something that would be... Because Galactica 1980, it was still like a different premise and everything like that. This is just sort of more like, well, I mean, kind of like what they did with Mission Impossible, right? Where they brought back a bunch of the same people. Or at least Mr. Phelps was back, right? When they returned in the 80s. I don't know. Kind of like what they're doing with Coach now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, does
like that
mean we're due for a renaissance? Like, is it time for In Search of Ancient Mysteries?
But see, you can't call it that because that was the name of the first movie which spawned In Search of.
Ah, bummer. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have to brainstorm. Yeah. Figure out a next version of it.
Yep. This was a show, Ancient Mysteries, that Leonard Nimoy hosted in the 90s. And, you know, things were different this time. For one thing, it was on a network which maybe was a little more legitimate. No?
I think I said this when we focused on the show, but the 90s, when the cable boom came, there were a whole lot, you know, as Bruce Springsteen sang, 57 channels and nothing on. There was a whole lot, like people had not understood that they had to fill the time that they suddenly had. Mm-hmm. And so I think that gives birth to a show like Ancient Mysteries, where like it's like In Search of, only an hour long. Yeah. We gotta hold a plug. That's good.
Yeah. But the thing which is weird about it in terms of Leonard Nimoy and his performance is that now I think the perception of him changed. It changed in the 90s, you know, where as before, Leonard Nimoy was a guy who used to be Spock. By the time you get to the 90s, it's like, that's Spock, you know? That's him, that's his persona. And as opposed to it being like, hey, you know, kind of like a thing where it's like, oh, throwback. You see the crazy alien dude is now talking about aliens. Now it's like, it's Spock. It's Spock, and that's something to be taken seriously.
That's really a fair point, because I was of an age when In Search of was on, and even when, you know, when it was being repeated on Saturday afternoons or whatever, where I didn't come to Star Trek until after I had seen In Search of.
Mm-hmm.
So I was of the age where I, you know, too young to see the original run of Star Trek, but, you know, old enough to catch it when it had its resurgence with the movies and everything. So, yeah, I mean, like, my reaction to Ancient Mysteries would have been along those lines of, like, you know, that sort of ingrained it's Spock, whereas I didn't have that the first time I was watching it.
And I think kind of subconsciously, Nimoy had that going on as well, where, you know, as before it was like, I mean, who knows? This is all speculation, but it's like, you know, In Search of is a job, which I have to do because, you know, I'm not getting a bunch of, you know, really fat residual checks.
Yeah.
Now he's like, I'm Spock. And if I want to do Ancient Mysteries, I'm going to do Ancient Mysteries because I'm Spock, you know? And you do, in the few episodes which I've seen of each, you do kind of see a bit more confidence in him in Ancient Mysteries. At least to me, you do. I don't know whether it's just that he was having more fun, you know, or what, but it was, I don't know. It's subtle. And maybe it's just my perception. Maybe it's just a result of the sort of like aesthetic of the time period or something like that. But that's the impression that I got. I don't know.
I think it's a fair read.
Okay. So that was it. Just 5 shows: Star Trek, Mission Impossible, Star Trek, In Search of, and Ancient Mysteries. So looking at that filmography or telography, what conclusions can you draw?
I think that I'm really glad that we came back and revisited all of these things, because it was so easy with Nimoy's passing to simply say, oh, it's Mr. Spock. But to revisit this, he left a mark that was, you know, simultaneously, he was unable ever to escape Spock, in a sense. But at the same time, I think you can also see in the trajectory of his career, even with just these shows, his growing, you know, to borrow from you, his growing confidence, but also the mark that he left in such a bigger sense than just being that character from Star Trek. You know, I mean, you know, we haven't even talked about, like, you know, smaller stuff or directorial, but, like, just if you just take these TV shows, here's a guy that made a real impression in a bunch of different ways, not just as that alien with the pointy ears on that cult show from the 60s.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And, you know, when I was first, you know, kind of researching this to put it together, and I was like, well, we need to do what he did as a TV star. And I was expecting a bit more, honestly. I thought in a career that spanned, you know, 50 years or whatever, we were going to see a couple more shows in that time.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I mean, it was very sort of lean in that aspect. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he did so much else, you know? He didn't just settle on, you know, acting for television. You know, he obviously did acting for the big screen, and there's a lot of, like, guest starring things. You know, he was never willing to just settle for one thing and just ride that out for as long as he could. Even with Star Trek, he didn't do it. I really get the impression that every time he came back to Star Trek, it was because I have something else that I want to do, you know? And you can take that outside of the acting, of course, as well, and look at, like you were saying, his directing or his photography or his music career. Don't forget about the legend of Bilbo Baggins, you know?
Who can? Who really can? And I will say that his version of If I Had a Hammer has a real special place in my heart as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mean, that really kind of speaks to him as sort of an individual and his creativity and everything like that. And I think that, you know, you can look at his television career as sort of a microcosm of his career on the whole, you know, where he's doing, you know, live action, he's doing animation, he's doing, you know, hosting of quote unquote documentary series or whatever. And it's really kind of cool how diverse it is. So, yeah, I'm really glad, too, you know, like you were saying, that we were able to take a look at his TV work and sort of open up the scope of his impact beyond Star Trek. I guess that's what this show's all about. So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. One other thing before we go. Don Mankiewicz, who is he was the writer of Court Martial, the original series episode. Which was one of the very first episodes which I saw. And one of my, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say it's one of my all-time favorites, but I think it's a pretty solid episode where Captain Kirk is put on trial and everything like that. Don Mankiewicz passed away earlier this week at the age of 93. But beyond Star Trek, he had a really big career. He was an Oscar nominee for a movie called I Want to Live, which was directed by Robert Wise, by the way. Have you seen that movie?
I have not.
I'm not going to go so far as to say it's good, but it's really interesting. It's basically about a woman who's sentenced to death for murder, and she's basically saying, I'm innocent, you know? You know, so you got that whole thing going on. It's very much sort of like anti-death penalty stuff. It's really kind of interesting. I think it's based on a true story. I'm not sure. But the ending, like the most of the movie is just the sort of like weird melodramatic thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you get to the ending and like the last like 5 or 10 minutes become, well, I won't tell you what happens because I don't want to ruin the ending. But it becomes this sort of like procedural thing where it very coldly takes you through a process and it just kicks you in the gut. And it's really, really crazy. It starred Susan Hayward. And she won Best Actress that year. The year was 1958. So this was pre-Star Trek. And he was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, I think. He was also nominated for a couple of Emmys, one for Marcus Welby, M.D., and one for Ironside. So,
He worked on Ironside?
Yeah. He worked on everything. He worked on MacGyver. He worked on Simon and Simon.
Oh, my gosh. I love that show. Watched a lot
everything.
Of TV as a kid.
Mannix. And Yeah, and he worked on Star Trek. He wrote Court Martial. So just wanted to make note of that. He was, you know, a legendary screenwriter who not many people probably remember at this point, but I figured should definitely note his passing. So R.I.P. Don Mankiewicz, you'll be missed.
Very much.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Set this movie at the end of the five-year mission. Skip ahead 5 years, you know, kind of like Dark Knight or whatever, and then say, okay, we've had all these adventures, blah, 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 and now we're at the end. We're about to go home, you know, and it's been, a fun time was had by all.
Earl Grey.
Again, you know, because it's January, my ship was shot beyond the bounds of normal interstellar travel to the center of the galaxy, but we were back in time for tea.
The orb.
They're not even thinking about it at this point. Okay, how do we start the resistance? Yeah, yeah, yeah. How do we do all this?
Yeah.
Because they have become comfortable with where they are and thinking that they're doing all they can, and yet we know, as the audience, that they're not.
To the journey!
I want you to say right now in front of our friends, okay, and in front of me and the Lord Almighty, what is your favorite season?
Okay, this isn't the favorite season.
I want you to tell me what your favorite season is.
Daniel and Darren, promise we won't ever be like this.
The Ready Room.
So what's the deal? You know, does Tom have a dad we don't know about?
Apparently.
Because who was this guy that he was remembering
as his
dad?
Was that Nick Locarno's dad?
That was Nick Locarno's dad, yes.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But I mean, here's the question, John. If you're living Fight Club, then, you know, we have to ask. If you could fight anyone, who would you fight?
William Shatner.
All right.
Literary Treks.
The main storyline here is the battle for the Vulcan soul. They are one of the most logical races, and yet they have an intensely spiritual aspect to them.
Axanar, the official podcast.
You were there. Mm. How long did we wait for them to try and reach that footage?
Oh, man, it was at least as long as the Enterprise penetrating V'ger's outer shield to getting into the actual machine core.
The 602 Club.
So, as far as the realism question is concerned, whether or not it's the right thing to do, it's the Marvel way to do it. I mean, I think that's the defining difference between Marvel and DC.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Zune, or Windows Phone podcast directory, or you can stream from our website. Just go to trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. We'd also like you to support our sponsor, audible.com, who brings commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our other Trek FM shows to you each week. And you can get a free audiobook of your choice by going to audibletrial.com/trekfm. There's more than 150,000 titles to choose from. You can get Star Trek books. You can get non-Star Trek books. You can get anything you want there. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today, and you'll get a free audiobook of your choice. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank Audible for supporting commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. And one more way that you can support us is by becoming a patron of the network on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And you can donate to the network. And that'll help us, keep the show up and running. You know, pay for the cost of the servers and whatnot. And there's different rewards for donors at certain levels. It's kind of like Kickstarter, but on a monthly basis. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm and help us out if you can. We would greatly appreciate it. You can also leave us a review on iTunes. I hear that actually is a big deal. That would help us out greatly.
Yes.
If you do that. So go ahead and do that. You don't have to like us, but
yes,
you know.
Yes, you do. We're likable guys. Come on.
All right. All right.
We're very likable guys. You like us so much, you want the world to know how likable we are.
There you go. There you go. You can also contact us more directly. You can leave us a voicemail on the show page on our website at trek.fm, or you can send us an email through our website, or you can just email us directly at comtrackstars@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at comtrackstars. John, where can people find you?
You can find me causing trouble on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, and you can also find me on a little show called Words with Nerds that airs every Thursday on iTunes and Stitcher and all the usual channels. Host it with my buddy Craig, and we talk about a whole mess of things.
And you can find me on the network right here doing Standard Orbit with Drew, where this week we're going to talk about what would have happened if the cage had been picked up. You can also find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com, where I do Commentary Track Stars Off Topic and Commentary Track Star Babies with Max and Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right. I think that's it. I know I'm forgetting something. Maybe not. But that's it for Leonard Nimoy. Nice retrospective. And we will be back next week with James Caan, the writer of Star Trek Voyager Season 7 and the Masterpiece Society from Next Generation, as well as the novelization to Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
And we'll be talking to him next week about all of his career, so be sure to check it out.